friends, as the title is put, Ambition as Against Spiritual Life, it seems that there are two conflicting movements, that they are juxtaposed in a way as if, and they actually are in many ways, a kind of movements which are on opposite directions. And yet in certain sense, there is a possibility to live a higher life, and yet have a drive in a man to achieve that which is most difficult to achieve, what is known as self-knowledge. So in other words, a man who is a seeker, who is an aspirant, is also in a certain sense have got a drive almost similar to the worldly ambitious man. He also got that energy in him, the zest in him, to proceed in the direction in which he has seen the value, the highest value that he could perceive of. So in that sense, spiritual life is not a spineless life, a life of passivity, of feebleness, weakness, a kind of a sort of a lethargy, an idealistic, dreaming life, but it is a life of energy. But before we can go to that, we have just referred to the dictionary to find the difference between ambition and the man who is an aspirant. Ambition is described as an inordinate desire. That is an extraordinary desire, not an ordinary desire. Inordinate desire for personal advancements. For craving for success, acquisition, position, power, etc., etc. So there is an actual craving or an intense desire for personal advancements. On the other side, the seeker or an aspirant is described, of course, in the voice of the silent, described as man of lofty hopes. He is one who strives after something uplifting. He is striving after excellence and the ideals that he has perceived to be true. So both of them are striving after something. The seeker on one side, the worldly aspirant who is called the ambitious man also. And both have got certain common denominators. That common denominators, of course, one must understand that they are men of stronger stuff. They are not ordinary people, they are men of sterner stuff. They are men who are highly motivated, really motivated. They are not lying idle. Although the man who is an aspirant is working silently on the inner planes, and so not visibly active, he is still an active on a much higher plane, and therefore he is using his psychic energy on a much higher plane, and therefore requires real good moral strength, what is called virya, the virile energy of manhood. So both of them are highly energetic and highly motivated. Then both have got that enthusiasm. In fact, Emerson at one place says that nothing great is ever achieved without enthusiasm. Nothing great, really, even in the ordinary worldly sense or in the spiritual sense, nothing is achieved without enthusiasm. And the third important qualification which is common to both is the willingness to pay the price. They are both willing to pay an extreme price sometimes. An ambitious man is willing to throw away his family, to throw away his own comfort, pleasures. See, look at scientists sometimes. They are working sometimes for 18 hours without caring for their health, without caring for their personal conditions, without caring for their family, without caring for pleasure, leisure, etc. Totally dedicated to their work. So to that extent, there is something positive about being ambitious in that one particular direction. It's a lopsided direction. But the man of spiritual endeavor is also willing to sacrifice. But the greatest sacrifice that he gives is of his own personal comfort. He doesn't sacrifice his family like an ambitious businessman. He sacrifices himself, his own comforts, his own things which the world requires to be needed. And therefore, you'll find that in that chapter of vigilance, which means apamad, this absence of sloth, these people are considered as ever strenuous endeavor, men who are in ever strenuous endeavor. But then vigilance is also on page 100 on notes. the other meaning of the word mindfulness is ethical awareness, wakefulness, consciousness, thoughtfulness, carefulness, and zeal and earnestness. So this zeal and that earnestness is such that he is described as a mountaineer who has reached a height in his own spiritual endeavor. He has reached a height from which he looks down upon the world with certain amount of pity. See, he is described as a man who is like a charger outdistancing a weak horse. Here is a man who drives, who outdistances a weak horse, like a charger. Then he is like an Indra, God, who has achieved lordship over gods. And then he is described as the man who advances like a fire consuming fetters. So here is not the person who is a weakling in any sense of the word. So not to be ambitious is not that a man is lying idle, silent, quiet, living in peace, seeking tranquility, going away into the jungle, seeking isolation and seclusion. All these are paraphernalia. But fundamentally, inside of him, he has got that drive. That's why you say he is highly motivated. See, nowadays we talk of motivation. You see, these management gurus are always talking about motivations. But here is a man who is so self-motivated that he appreciates the energy, the drive and the zeal, the zest that the man of ambition pursues. He also has got the same drive and ambition. But then it's only the matter of goal. It's only the matter of motive with which he wants to pursue his ideals. So it's the difference of ideals. So both have will, both are willing to achieve something. Both are moving forward for progress. Progress in one direction. The other fellow is progressing in all round directions. The spiritual man cannot be a spiritual man unless there is an integral progress. A lopsided progress is not a progress. It can lead him into difficulties. That is why they say there is a bhakti marga and a gnan marga, and all those one-sided margas are only one-sided only. It's only an all-round personality. For man, he's a whole being. He's a total being. It's both body, mind and soul. So it's not that the neglect of the body, it's not that the neglect of his intellectual pursuits that the spiritual endeavor has to take place. It has to be taken with him. After all, these are the instruments which he needs and which can be taken along with him as he pursues further. Very often, you see, a spiritual man is considered as an idealist. He's a follower of ideals. And he is a dreamy man, a man of vision. He is in his dreamland. And of course the idealist calls that man a materialist and a purely a pursuer of a realist. See, both of them are looking askance at each other. But that's not fair. Because the truth is that idealist, though he is, has got certain ideals which are of a real kind. The most real thing that a man possesses is the spiritual nature of man. After all, the whole life of man is the life of the spirit, the life of the soul. All the outward forms are the mere expression of the same inner life. So the real life of man, actually and really, is the inner life of the man. And therefore the reality, once he acknowledges the reality, he tries to pursue it. So that is the difference, the pursuit, the direction, the goal, is directed to actual reality which he has sensed in some sense. In some form. And unless we have really sensed it, not merely intellectually accepted it, once you have really sensed that there is something higher within the man, which is everlasting, which is permanent, which is of value, of great consequence, then he pursues it. So an idealist pursues an ideal which is concrete in that sense, that it is of a reality which is true to him, which is real to him at least, and therefore he pursues it. On the other hand, man of the world, so-called the man of the world, or what is called the realist, he pursues tangible things, which are very short-lasting, which are ever-fleeting, impermanent, which are valuable at that time. Not that we are supposed to concern wealth. We are not supposed to despise wealth. Wealth is a valuable asset. Such a valuable asset, one can say, that it is described, that it is being presided over by no less a great Shakti, Shri, that Lakshmi, is being presided over. but on condition of purity of motive and purity of life. So life of pursuit for wealthy one is not to be despised. We were surprised to find that in Bhagavad Gita, in the very last line of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, wherever Krishna, the supreme master of devotion, and wherever the son of Pritha, the mighty archer may be, there will certainty or fortune, victory, wealth and wise action. Wise action is counterpoise against these two. Fortune, fortunate nature, Shri, victory and wealth. So wealth is something not to be despised. Although the man who is striving after wealth may look to be only a lucre, only wealth. But why does he pursue wealth? There is a very beautiful article in what is called the Living of the Higher Living the Life by Sri B.P. Wadia. These are the republication articles published in, taken and collected from the old Theosophical Movement magazine. And there are two very interesting articles called Lust for Power and By That Sin the Angels Fell. And there he says that the power and the ambition for power is not merely to be despised, because that also requires a kind of inner force, a drive. Only thing is that how the wealth is to be utilized and to what extent. And ultimately he says that why does a man pursue wealth? Well, so that he can have some kind of a status symbol. He wants to car, he wants this, he wants that, all those gadgets to make him comfortable. But in addition to that, there is what is called status symbol, that it makes him feel something superior to others. What the psychologists will call self-esteem. And he seeks self-esteem so that he may be loved. Secretly and hidden sense, even the great author of motivation and personality, Dr. Maslow, says that there is what are called conscious drives, but there are unconscious drives. And that at the unconscious level, the man is seeking attention, the man is seeking affection, the man is seeking love and affection from his people. Though on the outward form, though he doesn't even know about it, he is unconscious. On the outward form, he is seeking position, power, etc., etc. But all this for what? So that he may be valued, so that he may be loved, he may be taken care of, that people consider him as something valuable, so that in his own eyes he may rise. So all this appears to be trivial. It is in a way trivial, because it is a one lopsided pursuit. But after all, it is a strength that is required to pursue. It's not an ordinary energy that is needed for such a pursuit. So a practical man of virtue, a practical man, has not to be despised in one sense. For the whole modern civilization owes it. We owe it to them for the tremendous energy with which they have contributed. The man of energy have contributed to the progress of the modern civilization. With all its dark side, we must admit that great things have happened on this, in the at least one last century. We call it the atomic age, the space age. Unfortunately, the space that we are searching is outside. But there is a hidden space which also has to be searched after. That is what has been neglected. We have been seeking, in fact the world has shrunk thanks to this communication media. A great contribution by great advancement in technology has made things very easy for many people. Modern medicine has advanced by leaps and bounds, at least in the last 20 years. So we have to salute them in one sense, that these ambitious men of genius, they have given contribution. That the world that we live in, this very microphone that we owe it to them, is thanks to one adventurous man who diligently strives even after inquiring and search after certain scientific inventions. So we have to thank them. But then, that's that. Only it is at that level. So, it has also one great thing that has happened is, in the modern world, that there is greater awareness. That the world has shrunk in the sense that there is a lot of interdependence and internationalism. A lot of sharing is going on thanks to this communication media. The world has shrunk. They have become, you can call it the global village. Nowadays we talk about the global village. The ideal of human brotherhood is coming, we are coming nearer, at least on a material plane. That we need each other is definitely understood. That concern for your nature, these ecologists who are talking of nature, is nothing else but the advancement of science has opened our eyes. That we have exploited nature and we are tapping it so much that one day we will going to face the difficulties. this knowledge that has been accumulated is thanks to men of ambition. So to that extent we must of course recognize their worth and value. Now, what is progress in that sense? On an individual level, of course, it is self-fulfillment. You see, the man must feel himself fulfilled. And it is only when the man is all round that he can feel fulfilled. A man is physically depleted or is intellectually not so very well developed. He cannot call himself a spiritual man for long. He will find himself difficulties. Physical weakling or an intellectual feeble man cannot be a spiritual man. It requires certain amount of a grasp on things and also requires a solid constitution to be able to withstand the stress and strain of trials that that neophyte has to undergo. So, this fulfillment on one side and mere goal achievement in terms of career or in particular pursuit or one-sided pursuit for your career or advancements, and sometimes at the expense of your own character, and most of the time it is at the expense of character. Actually, the price that a man has to pay is that sometimes he has to become low. You see, it requires a lot of discrimination to be able to understand what is essential and what is non-essential. The priorities must be set right. The drive may be there in a man, but this energy must be properly directed, otherwise it will go waste. So properly directed energy requires a lot of wisdom. To be able to distinguish between the right and the wrong is very difficult. But even among the right, the greater and the less, the priority, the essential, the most essential. For a man, this duty towards his family is essential. But for a king, his duty to nation is more important than duty to his family. So he sets his priorities in the right manner. So the setting of priority requires a lot of wisdom. So the first step, of course, in the direction is not only energy, because energy can be wasteful. So the drive, the energy, etc. comes afterwards. The will is necessary to proceed in the direction. But in which direction? The direction is thanks to buddhi quality, the faculty of discrimination. So before that, the value judgment of the goals must be very clear-minded about. So the essentiality and non-essential side, one must be very clear-minded about that before we can take the step in the right direction. And the way to measure is whether this is going to be a lasting thing or it is a temporary. It may be there are things which are of temporary nature, valuable at that time, but valuable only at that time, and we must put the right value to it. We must not neglect it. As I just said, wealth has to be valued, but when it has to be utilized in the right direction, the right manner, then it is valuable. Otherwise it will become a burden. Really, the wealth can become a burden on the heart of many people. People have sleepless nights with too much wealth. So it's like that. But it can, and wealth, etc., can also develop some kind of vanity. When a man of power has got some kind of vanity, they have got some kind of aggressiveness. Talking about aggressiveness, we have just referred to one advertisement in a corporate magazine talking about this man of drives. High voltage performers, high performance people, go-getters, calculatingly aggressive. These are the kind of words which are used for ambitious people, and these words indicate that they are completely blind to the realities, the true spiritual existence, the true center of their being. That they are just go-getters, to get it at any cost, even at the cost of their own sense of values. So this can happen. That rajasic zest can lead you into destruction. Even in the world of sports, you see the kind of an aggressive in the world of competition. Sports have become competition. Beauty competition. Everywhere you will find nothing else but the base quality of man is now brought to the surface, and a kind of a dog eating dog kind of nature. That's so a civilization which is based on these qualities is bound to decay. And therefore the greatness, as we just said, that the modern civilization we owe to such great men of drive. But what is true civilization, you see? That is also very important to understand. For that, Emerson puts it very beautifully. He says, the true test of civilization is not census. That is economic statistics, gross national income, or this, or gross national values, not the size of cities, not the crops, that is production of a nation, but the kind of man that a country turns out. So it is not that that India can produce more beauty queens, that we are greater values in Olympics, or that we have got more atom bombs than others. That's not the greatness. That how many great men that country has produced. That if a country has produced men like Ashoka, a man like Akbar, or even in our own lifetime, and men like Gandhiji, such a great country is a great country. So Mahabharata, when we say our country is Mahan, in what sense it is Mahan? It is because he has got the national value, national, that we can sit in the assembly of United Nations with certain pride. Is that the value? Or that we can say with courage, and that we have produced poets like Rabindranath Tagore, or a mystic like Sri Aurobindo. Like that, you see, we have to count such great beings. A nation which has produced such great luminaries, such a nation is great in that sense. Unfortunately, it has not reached us. We have not valued them. We are not going to follow them. Civilization, ultimately, if it is a material civilization, it will become a curse. That is why HPB at one time, one place says that great intellect and too much knowledge are the two-edged weapons, that it works both ways. They are the instruments for evil as well as for good. See, I said in Secret Doctrine, when combined with selfishness, this intellect and knowledge will make of the whole of humanity a footstool, and we can exploit it for the elevation of him who possesses them, and means for attainment of his own objects, while applied to altruistic and humanistic purposes, they may become the means of salvation for the men. This is all that the progress that we have made, but it is in which direction and for what purposes it has been utilized. In addition, is it motivated by selfish motives, or it is, or behind that, there is that inward urge to be of service to others. So this is the starting point. You have been very clear-minded as to your motive. From this platform, hundreds of times we must have mentioned that motive comes first. That unless we are very clear-minded as to where we are directing our energies, the direction in which we are moving, and that our goals have been very well set, and that behind all this, the heart is clean. If you are absolutely sure of that, then take the first step. Because without that preparation, it's like a surgeon who cleans his hand, puts on a glove. He cannot do surgery with unclean hands. Cleanliness is the first step. Otherwise, he will pollute the condition of this theater. He has to take out his shoes. He has to completely change his dress to enter the theater. See, even on the physical plane, a lot of cleanliness is required. So the clean perception and a clean motive is the starting point for all spiritual endeavors. Then comes the drive, that energy, that zest, the zeal to go on. But without that, of course, there is no progress. That also is required. The will to progress. And perseverance, to pursue it up till end. To the final end, even at the cost of all personal comforts. So that willingness to pay the price also should be there. So the civilization has landed us into difficulties, hardcore professionals. See the word called hardcore professional. That is at the core there is some hardness. See the word hardcore professionals. My daughter has been very often using that word hardcore. You see, people, they are in that business world and they are all hardcore. Hardcore means extraordinary. But I always tell her, look at the core of the heart. They are very hard. It can actually soften up. There is nothing refinement about it. Only today a friend told me that the word civilization is derived from the word civil. And civil means gentleness. Civility means gentleness. It doesn't mean a civilian means a citizen. Civilian, of course, means a citizen. But civilization is the word derived from the word civil, which is something of a gentleness, some kind of refinement of nature. So civilization which is not refined is useless. It is a burden. It is going to land itself into trouble. And it is, as we see today, the advancement on one side, the one-sided development purely on the material plane. Necessary though it is, our feet must be firmly footed, agree? But not stuck on the earth. Firmly footed doesn't mean your feet should be stuck. You should be able to walk on the earth properly, intellectually. There's a story of Ramakrishna Paramahans. In his ashram, there was a very advanced disciple. One day he told him that you go and buy a matka in the bazaar. The fellow bought the matka and brought back. But the matka had a crack in it and it was useless. He said, how did you buy this? Ramakrishna asked. He said, but I was thinking of Ram Nam, I was uttering Ram Nam, I didn't. Uttering Ram Nam does not mean you are not to be concentrated. The moment you leave the ashram, you are going out into the world. You must have, your feet must be firmly footed on the earth. You must knock and find out what it is that you are buying. So when we are dealing with the world, we must have got certain worldly wisdom, necessary as it is. But it should not be again lopsided so that it may outdistance the quality of the heart. So hardcore quality is not necessary to be able to pursue life of civilized life. There is another statement from HPB that present civilization owes its existence to human character. He says all good and evil things in humanity, that is in humanity or in civilization, whatever good and evil that you today see, have their roots in human character. It all boils down to one's character. Everything else comes secondary. And character, of course, you know, there is a quality of the soul, that quality of a permanent nature. So when we talk of soul, and we talk about you being an idealist, he is a realist in the sense that he has seen the reality of an inner nature. That there is that reality which is not only that within him, that within nature itself there is that reality ever existing. That there is that divine spirit of life and light which is ever existing and which is the source and the support of his whole being. You cannot afford to neglect that source and then be concerned with the outward form. Form, of course, is necessary because these are the instruments of the soul. Instruments has to be sharp, has to be keen, has to be up to date, has to be efficient. But efficiency alone is not enough again. It has to be used, a knife is efficient, it has to be sharp, but has to be used by a skillful man. Again, that skill. And the skill is required both by an idealist as well as a practical man, a man of practical nature. So, civilization has brought us into difficulties. It is because it has been lopsided. So progress on an individual level really means real self-fulfillment. It has, and that only comes a kind of inner sense of worth. Once a banking clerk told me that in the banking there is a lot of competition and people want to strive and want to come up, and I find that it's such a futile. They don't have sense of worth. I said, what does it mean? He said, well, they don't have self-esteem. But they have self-esteem. They have got. They think that esteem is so high. They are very much. But that's a false self-esteem. The real self-esteem is something which brings peace within the consciousness, which brings an inner tranquility, which brings an inner strength, so that he is a charger, as the Bhagavad Gita and Dhammapada just mentioned. He's a charger, but a silent charger, who goes ahead of others in a spiritual sense. He's moving like a fire, but this is the fire of aspiration. So this is how it is. And in the ancient time, there was what is called the four pursuits, or four pushartha. This pushartha is this kind of drive, the ambition. There are four pushartha: karma, artha, dharma and moksha. These are four values people are pursuing. People are pursuing kama, the desire, the comfort, the things of sensuous nature. Then there is artha, wealth, position, power. There is also the pursuit of dharma on one side and the pursuit of moksha or liberation. This pursuit of one-sided pursuit could be the pursuit of artha and kama. And when you are caught up in that, it is called the acquisitive happiness. See, Lord Bertrand Russell, there is an essay on happiness. He calls it an acquisitive happiness. On the other side, there is a creative happiness. A creative happiness is the one which creates a great nation. It does create a nation. Men like Akbar and Ashoka created a great nation. After them, it lasted for a few centuries, their prominence and their effect. But because they are men of insight, they are men of vision, they are also idealists, but they also contributed to the development of this nation. So these idealists are not mere armchair philosophers on sitting in an ivory tower dreaming of worldly things, dreaming of impossible things. They are strongly, firmly footed on earth. They have knowledge about the world, but they are not caught up by the web of the world. And that whole life is a creative life. They do create. You see, aspiration requires a central will for progress. There is a central will. It comes from the very center of our being. And it is a fire which surges ever upwards towards light. And it is not a seeking. It is not merely seeking my own salvation. It is an act of giving. An aspiration. That aspiration is a kind of an urge which is a flame rising up towards the sun. It is an upward movement. Whereas acquisitive movement is grabbing, is pulling it, pulling things down to ourselves. So these two movements are in the opposite plane. And it is mostly egoistic, centered around our own personal values and own personal things. It is productive activity, no wonder. Creation on one side, production on the other. But production are visible things. As we say, tangible. Bank balance, that's what you want. But these tangible things are long, short lasting. Which people say, no, that one, at one place. That these are the, I mean, to be really, truly wise people, is it not those who have learned the deceptive value of earthly hopes and illusive allurements of external nature, they are destined to solve the great problems of life, pain and death. And to be able to solve these mighty problems requires a kind of wisdom. But the first step to wisdom is to be able to sense the futility and the shadow that we are following and pursuing. Civilization, however great they may be, rise and fall. Because nothing is lasting, nothing that has a beginning that cannot end. Anything that begins must end. However great the civilization may be, today where are those great ancient civilizations? Even they have perished. But it is, they have perished purely because of the materiality, the growth in one direction of materiality. They rose at one stage on a spiritual plane, but very quickly they degenerated on the material side. They have built great pyramids. The original aim for pyramids was of, they are the inner sanctuaries where great spiritual activity was going on. But then they are degenerated into great monuments. You see, they are tombs for great pharaohs and kings. So they are degenerated. And therefore, even today, that Egyptian civilization is no longer there. So these illusive allurements have to be noticed first. That we must know that these are ephemeral things which we are pursuing. And what about this ambition? It has always led us to competitive nature. This competition means rivalry, bitterness, loss of peace of mind, loss of tranquility, even violence, the law of the jungle, survival of the fittest. All these are the things which we have to accept first and foremost to be able to drive oneself on the line of ambition. Another thing, impatience, hurry. See, this is what somewhere it is mentioned about hurry. The more rapidly a civilization progresses, the sooner it dies for another to arise in its place. Havelock Ellis. How quickly a civilization develops. See, within one century, the world has completely changed its face. We have got the space age, and we have got the computer age, and we have got the atomic age, and we talk about this period and that era. But very rapid progress. However rapidly we break progress, soon there is going to be decay and loss. Another thing, by Bill Durant, no man who is in a hurry is quite civilized. No man in a hurry is quite civilized. We have got the example of Mr. Judge. You see, one of the very last words that he uttered is, "Goes, there shall be calmness, there should be calmness. Go slow. Hold firmly on." See, this talk about not only hold firmly on, he says go slow and there shall be calmness. Look at the central core of his life was calmness. Nobody would knew that he was a man of tremendous drive. Even Colonel Olcott, when he met him at the age of 25, he describes Mr. Judge that when I saw him, I never realized that he could achieve such a great height of spirituality and he could become the head of a great work that he has carried on in America single-handedly. So when he was left to himself at the very tender age of 26, when HBB left him all by himself and went to India, the whole burden fell on him. And then he could rise to the occasion. This man rose to the occasion, quite silently, unassumingly. He was a man so unassuming that nobody would notice it. That he could mingle with the crowd and nobody would notice that there was some greatness behind him. But quietly and peacefully he could rose. He rose. And he rose to an occasion when challenges fell on him, when the whole burden fell on him. He actually, at one time of course, he cried out. He wrote a very strong letter to Mavalankar saying that, see, I have been left to myself and I have not yet had the vision of the great Mahatmas whom I know is behind me. I am all alone, I am isolated. And then, before the Mavalankar replies to him, he again corrects himself and says, no, no. I know that there is a force behind me, that I must do something for which I am destined. So here is an unassuming man who has a tremendous force but a silent energy, a silent force which is working and driving like an engine in a direction which he has very clearly pursued. HPP has showed him in plan. That is what he was searching after. He said that I met HPP seeking and searching for a hidden plan, and HPP has showed him where the true knowledge is available. And then once he saw it, he pursued it to the last days of his life. So the drive that he was that in him came later on, but that silent energy was that. So this non-hurry, patient tranquility is the first quality that is required. Another quality that is required is simplicity. See this, on one side this ambitious life has created a high standard of living, but not the high quality of life. What about the quality of life? Standard of life may have increased. You see, you have the most latest gadgets available to give you comfort. What are you going to do with your leisure? The quality of life can suffer. And this complexity has increased. Formerly, when there was no complexity, when there was a simple life, where there were no so many gadgets, people had time to think, people have time to share, people have time to give themselves to their family. Now we have no time to give to our family. We come from morning till night, we are working, slogging to make our ends meet. And then at the end of the day, we are just busy with our own profession, busy with our own career, and neglecting the very close people, family members. And sometimes the children are gone astray simply because they have been neglected. Only the mothers look after them. The father has never the time to give himself to his children because he is ambitious. He is building his own career. So this is what can happen. The complexity of life has increased with the increase of so-called material civilization, and that has landed us into personal problems. Stress, the great disease of the modern world. Great problems of modern psychology is this stressfulness, leading to psychosomatic disorders. In America, it is said there is a book called The Mental Breakdown of a Nation, and that psychologist gives us statistics that there are large number of asylums which cannot take up so many insane fellows. There are too many suicides, too many divorces, divorce courts, too many unmarried mothers, too much crime. All these are the increase, all because of this stressful state of life and complexity in which we have built the present civilization, because we have that ambition. But ambition has landed us into more trouble than has brought us out of it. There is grown blessings, as we just mentioned, that the world has shrunk. Now we have become more conscious of each other, that we have concern for each other, no doubt about that. It has given us gadgets by which we can save many life situations. Life-saving things have come up. But at the same time, it has also created its own problems, and therefore, ultimately, what really matters are the permanent things of life. So the success is, whether it is in relation to one's career or one's own personality, or whether an all-round development of man. See, if we refer to Bhagavad Gita, yoga is considered as skill in performance of action. So a man of action is also, of course, an efficient man. He's a man of skill. But his skill is limited to his own work, limited to his own profession, limited to his own career. What Bhagavad Gita speaks about the skill is an all-round skill. And there, of course, he goes much further to say, the skill without anxiety for reward. See, this anxiety for reward already has left us loss of... Because you can't make calm decision. You can't make decisions in a calm manner if you have concern for a reward. If a surgeon is worried as to whether the patient is going to survive or not survive, then he won't be able to perform the operation. If he is going to perform operation on his own daughter, naturally his hand will shake because he is worried what will happen to him. So a surgeon man is in a detached condition. So this detachment and the calmness is the first requisite for the living of a higher life. Whereas a mere purely ambitious, hardcore desire to achieve lands us into anxiety, tension, loss of peace, loss of tranquility, and then the decisions sometimes are lopsided. Decisions are sometimes land you into great trouble and difficulties. But we are in great difficulties today. Why? Why there are so many wars? Why nations are suspicious of each other? It is because it has been left to ambitious politicians. Politicians, one of the definition of politician means ambitious man. His first quality is ambition. Without that he cannot survive in this cutthroat competition. See the word cutthroat competition. Cutting the throat, rising on the feet of each other, rising on the shoulders of each other, elbowing out each other. All these are the words of aggressiveness. And without this aggressiveness there cannot be ambition. That's what ambitious people say. But the aspirant, one who aspires, he is not a supine man, he is not a weakling. He has got a strong spine. He stands on his own feet, firm. But he can stand up and stand up firmly because within him there is some kind of righteousness. He is self-fulfilled. Because he is self-fulfilled, he has got his self-esteem. His self-esteem is not based on mere outward praise or outward name and fame. Within his own eyes he has risen. And once a man rises in his own eyes, he doesn't require any outside judgment to tell him how great he is. A great man knows how great he is. That's the true value of greatness. So, he said that the heights of great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight. But while their companions slept, they were toiling upwards in the night. So that this toiling upwards in the night means that quietly, when nobody knows. That is what we said, that Mr. Judge was quietly working in the right direction. Unassumingly, with great humility, nobody realized the greatness of this individual. But while others are asleep, he is working hard, quiet, peacefully. But peacefully, not with that drive which can be visible, not restlessly. So the yoga of Bhagavad Gita, which talks about the skill in performance of action, means not only efficiency. Efficiency, of course, is the first quality, is a quality required. Efficient action. But with certain amount of inward calmness, with certain amount of decision making, which is based on inner tranquility. An aptitude comes from within. And that will to achieve is not merely seeking for reward. It is not seeking for reward. And in the spiritual sense, such a man, when a man, it is also possible that a spiritual man can also become ambitious. But then a spiritual ambition is a very great danger. That is what the Life on the Path says. It's about reading that portion. It talks about the ambition, the Life on the Path, the very first three rules are said, kill out ambition, kill out desire for life, kill out desire for comfort. But then immediately it corrects it. But work as those work who are ambitious. That you don't have to be lying idle. You have to work as those who are ambitious. Respect life as those who desire it. And be happy as those who live for happiness. And then the footnote to this ambition is wonderful. He says, ambition is a curse, especially for a neophyte, especially for one who is striving for a higher life. It's a great tempter of a man who is trying to rise above his fellows. It is, in a simplest form, it is looking for reward. That is what that Bhagavad Gita says, that if you are looking for reward, then you are really ambitious. Men of intelligence and power are led away from their higher possibilities by this continually. Yet, it is a necessary teacher. Its results turn to dust and ashes in the mouth. So ultimately, it turns out to be dust and ashes in the mouth. That and estrangement, it shows the man at last that to work for self is to work for disappointment. In the long run, it will work for disappointment. But though the first rules seem so simple and easy, these are the first rules, do not quickly pass by it, for these vices of the ordinary man pass through a subtle transformation and may reappear with changed aspect in the heart of a disciple. So when a spiritually inclined man, he has got a spiritual ambition, he wants to rise above his colleagues. In an ashram, there is a secret competition going on among the disciples. Each disciple is thinking, who is going to take the place of a guru? So here is a competition. You see many ashrams, that is definitely, especially if the ashram has got a lot of wealth. A great Sri Aurobindo ashram, great ashram like Sri Aurobindo which was started, there you see when the money matter came up, court cases came up. ISKCON, the great center of spiritual knowledge. Again, not only political bickering, not only money, wealth, going to court, but even murder. So in these spiritual centers and circles, ambitious people come up.